robot voice comes in, you know it is time to begin. And wherever you are, whenever you are, and however you happen to be listening, we're so glad you've chosen to tune in to
ELC.
Woo! Especially if you're one of our geeks and sneaks using this podcast to power you through a workout or a run. Or hey, maybe you're smelling those spring flowers. Maybe you're on a walk. Maybe you got the dog on a leash or the cat on a leash or, I don't know, your alpaca. Whatever the case, we're going to be with you for 90 plus minutes of gaming goodness because DLC is your downloadable commentary for the week, delivered the way we love it to be, and that is completely free. Thanks to our patrons at patreon.com/DLCpod. Patrons, the lifeblood of DLC. You can become one at patreon.com/DLCpod. You can ensure this podcast continues. In exchange, you'll get some cool perks, including ad-free versions of the show, video versions of the show on demand, and a bunch of bonus content. We got extra shows for you, stuff reserved exclusively for patrons, including Feeling This with Alex Solman and Christian Spicer talking about the feelings behind video games, a new season on its way soon. Three seasons already there. If you're a new patron, waiting for you for enjoyment. Also, every single Wednesday, we do paid DLC, which is the wackier, goofier, more lighthearted version of this show, if you can imagine that, where Lana Bashinsky joins us to talk about what the patrons want to talk about. Prompt goes up. Patrons every single week talk back to us about their feelings, and we discuss it. All good fun, all there. Because patrons support this show. This show, of course, the main show, DLC, is all about games in their many forms. Games played on desktops, laptops, and consoles. Also games that involve dice, luck, and cardboard. I'm your host, Jeff Cannata. That's spelled with two N's and one T. And I am joined, as always, by my friend slash co-host slash nemesis. The guy who's still eating colored eggs, Mr. Christian Spicer. Hello, Christian. I don't know.
I mean,
are you? No, you may not
that,
be. You,
that is
you
creepy.
Eat eggs?
I straight up had a hard-boiled dyed Easter egg just this morning.
Oh, there you go.
Like you have a window into my soul, my friend. It was delicious. Was
what I always remembered as a kid is like two solid months of eating colored eggs.
You dyed them, you eat them. Okay, Papa.
Well, believe it or not, this is not a show about eggs or Easter or anything like that. We're talking video games, and we got some big ones to talk about, some huge releases. It's just the way it is now. We get multiple Game of the Year candidates in a single week coming out, and oh my goodness, are we going to dig into it? Plus, some big news to get to. Oh, it's going to be a good episode. And the good news is we have an awesome guest to talk about all of that with. You know the DLC always stands for your downloadable Kanata and your downloadable Christian. But this week, woohoo, I'm excited because DLC stands for decades of living with a console. Because that describes a PlayStation generation. And we have the host of PlayStation Generation, Matt Sawinski, joining us for the first time. Hey, Matt, how are you?
What's going on, folks? Super stoked to be here. I feel like I missed out on this whole dyed eggs thing, and now I kind of want to just go and dye a bunch of eggs tomorrow.
You missed out on it this year or
just ever?
Always?
Always. We dyed like the shells of the eggs, but like never the innards.
Wait, how do you dye the shells of the eggs without the egg?
No. We're talking the same thing.
My mind jumped to like the actual egg, and I was like, hold on. I've been doing this wrong my entire life.
If you were like me, you grew up eating eggs that had been the dye had seeped into the like it was clearly chemicals that I was ingesting, which I guess explains a lot. But the eggs themselves, when I would peel them and eat them, they would also be strange colors.
Well, I feel like we might be onto something here. I think this is like a $1 million idea where we ditch the shells, just do the eggs. And I think we got something really special here.
Just dye some scrambled eggs. Cut out the middleman. Cut out the middleman. And by middleman, I mean shell.
Yep.
Just cut it right out.
Mm-hmm.
And then 10 years later from that, we'll just be like, kids, happy Easter. Drink some dye.
here's a side of Tide Pods for everybody, just to keep it, just keep things interesting.
Tis the season.
Mm-hmm. Tis the season.
All right, we got a lot to get into, so you know, I guess eggs will have to be put to the side for now, just for now. I know that's
to be found later. To be found later.
To be found by their aroma alone. All right, let's get into it. Let's start the show the way we always do with Story of the Week.
Story of the week, it's the story of the week. Story of the week, it's the story of the week.
Story of the week is the part of the show where we make our case for the most important stories that happened in the world of games this week. You can always submit stories for our consideration by sending us an email to dlcfeedback@gmail.com. That's our email address. That's where you send it. You can also send comments, questions, anything you'd like us to know. We love hearing from you. dlcfeedback@gmail.com. But Matt, you are our guest. You get first pick of stories. What would you consider to be your story of the week?
I have to give it to PlayStation. I don't think there's any other major publisher developer out there that really likes to drop the release date for their biggest game of the year on like a random Wednesday morning, unassumed and unannounced. It's just, here it is. It's coming out. I am incredibly excited about Ghost of Yote. I can't wait to get my hands on it. And the new trailer looks awesome. Release date is awesome. I'm here. I can't wait.
Yes, indeed. We got that juicy release date, which is October 2nd, 2025. It's coming this year, at least they claim. October 2nd, pretty early in the old fall release window. And we did get a new trailer, a really, I thought, pretty darn cool trailer. Lots of, it was more of a story trailer, lots of in-game cinematic stuff. But right at the end of it, some delightful horse running through beautiful locations montage. So I know I'm guessing you enjoyed Ghost of Tsushima, and that's why you're excited for Yote. But is there anything, Matt, that you saw in this new trailer that particularly made this sequel stand out to you as being really exciting?
I'm really looking forward to Erika Ishii's performance. I find that they're a fantastic voice actor. They're an incredible person. And I'm very much looking forward to the glimpses of what we saw in that trailer, their emotion coming through, the story tidbits that we saw. I really loved Ghost of Tsushima. I did find that the story was one of the weaker parts of a fantastic package, in my opinion. I feel like it started strong, ended strong, and the middle was a little bit meandering. So I'm kind of hoping that they really drill down and give us like a fantastic start to finish story here. And I think kind of really framing that around Erika's character, obviously taking us to a new place, giving us a lot to dive into with that trailer. It looks dark. It looks, you know, angry. There's a lot of stuff coming out of there. So I'm really looking forward to what the story is going to be like. I feel like a lot of these games, and I think especially anything based around samurais or Japan, it always comes back down to honor. And I'm kind of hoping that even in the first game, we got that in pieces, though it was handled well. I'm curious to see what they're going to give to us here. And I'm really looking forward to seeing Erika's performance kind of shine through.
Yeah. Yeah. You're right that it did have a darker tone to at least this trailer. And it felt very, all these masks, and they went through like the different animals that the masks are supposed to evoke. And, you know, the spider one with a bunch of eyes on it, and the dragon one with the big mustache, very, almost elements of a horror theme, you know, very intense. And yeah, I'm hoping it brings it like that. I think that I was pretty impressed with the trailer. I thought the trailer was very strong for setting mood and setting it apart. You know, we're in this crazy place where we had many years of no samurai games, and now we had Ghost of Tsushima, we've just had Assassin's Creed Shadows and Ghost of Yote coming up. It feels like we have this abundance of riches for this setting. But it does feel like Yote, what it's showing is, it's got its own identity that it's really, carving out for itself, which is exciting. Christian Spicer, I know you are a massive fan of Tsushima. So, what did you make of this, trailer and the fact that we're getting it, in early October?
Yeah. Sooner than I expected. I thought the trailer was great. I do think, from the story trailer, they presented it to be, I think, fairly similar narratively to Assassin's Creed Shadows, in the sense of kind of this grand revenge tour style. You've got these people you've got to go kill. And not that Assassin's Creed Shadows was the first, you know, media property to take on that theme. But as you mentioned, Jeff, having both of them kind of coming out now in the same year, fairly or not, I think come the end of the year, they will be compared against one another.
Yeah, and sort I'm of curious, inevitable, I think. Yeah.
Yes. And I'm curious what your take can do to further differentiate itself from Shadows, even though the combat is pretty different between the two of them. At least Tsushima's combat, I felt like, was more stand and fight, but not in the way of you're a tank, you know, but you're balancing all of these enemies around you and kind of how you would engage with them. So it kind of splits the middle between Assassin's Creed Shadows, two protagonists in terms of how you engage in combat. But I'm very curious how Yote evolves what they did in Tsushima and then how it further differentiates itself from Assassin's Creed Shadows this year. And this trailer, I don't think, answered those questions. This trailer looked like it was very much more of Tsushima, but with a new story. And let's be honest, I'm perfectly okay with with that. I like The Last of Us Part II. I like God of War Ragnarok. I like Spider-Man 2. I'm okay when a game gives me more of the same and just, you know, turns it to 11 or turns it up a notch. So that's what I expect of Yote, but I also want to put it past Sucker Punch to take a big swing somewhere in here also and try something new. We'll see.
Interesting. This, you know, feels like one of the major Sony exclusives this year, right? Early October feels like we're making the way for something else.
Like a car that might get stolen.
Well, there's that. That's for sure.
That's what they're getting out of the way.
I'm still doubtful that's happening in 2025. Maybe you're more correct. I was thinking, well, maybe we're going to get a surprise, you know, Wolverine announcement or something. I don't know. But
there's been rumors of a surprise Sony Santa Monica something, something.
I suspect you're right. It's more about getting out of the way of that 800-pound gorilla. But I don't know. Matt, do you have any other insight into that or thoughts?
I do wonder if that, like, I feel this entire rollout of this release date seems like they know something, or at least have a strong enough inkling that they are aware that GTA release date might be imminent. We might be getting that in the next couple of weeks. And I feel like they're confident enough, if they're willing to date it, that they feel like it's coming in the back half of October or towards November. And I feel like that's a pretty safe guess. This feels like, you know, why not wait for your state of play coming around Summer Game Fest, or why not talk about it back in February? We're kind of in this in-between space that it feels like they're trying to get ahead of something. And as Christian said, that GTA seems like that massive, you know, thing that's just around the corner. So yeah. I'm hopeful that, you know, it won't get lost in the wash of everything GTA. If it's coming this year, that's a giant asterisk. And I do wonder if we are going to get something more gameplay dedicated around Summer Game Fest. A question for both of you, because something that I've been thinking about is, do you think one of the major things in Yote that can be the differing factor when it comes to comparing it to Tsushima is a glider? Playing Rise of the Ronin last year, I feel like that game had a lot of cool ideas if everything didn't completely gel. And the glider with the kind of hook swinging around was one of the better ideas. So, like, I'm picturing Summer Game Fest. There's going to be that moment, you know, where they're running, diving off a cliff, and then we're going to see, you know, the characters start flying around. Do you think that could be one of the things that makes Yote the next step of this franchise?
That's interesting. I think it's an interesting idea. I've always thought that these games were trying to ground themselves in something a little bit more authentic to, you know, human experience, and being able to flip out a glider and soar across the sky is, you know, is a little more fantastical, I think, but certainly is in vogue right now and would be super fun in a game like that. Interestingly, what I like, I was not a huge fan of Tsushima, at least is not as much as it sounds like either of you. The samurai game that grabbed me is Shadows because of the traversal. The traversal is just more fun to me, being able to climb anything and leap off of stuff and all that jazz that you get with an Assassin's Creed. So I don't know, maybe a Ghost of Yote adding in that traversal element will work for me personally, but I don't know if it, I have a hard time thinking it would fit into the sort of, you know, more realistic nature of what the first game was going for, but maybe I'm wrong. Christian, what do you think?
I mean, there certainly is precedent for the Sony sequel to make its tweak be traversal. We saw that with Spider-Man. That's what they did. And in Ragnarok 2, introducing the, not Ragnarok sled. 2, Ragnarok also, yes, yeah. The sled and becoming more, you know, those open hub and spoke areas. Ghost of is already an open world game. And so you look at something like Horizon, and they also played with traversal. So I think Matt is kind of, you know, reading the tea leaves here, whether or not it will be a glider or this will happen or not. I think there's certainly compelling evidence for, you know, that's three of them now where that was the MO for what happened. And I guess technically, if you want to say in Last of Us Part Two, the horse, you know, upgraded traversal, you know, maybe it's in all of their big franchises. They do that. So
Ellie needed a glider. That's what she needed.
That I mean, she could have gotten out of there a lot faster.
Yeah. Would have been so nice. Updraft, and we're out of Seattle. Or whatever it
was. throw the Molotov down, and there we go.
Easy peasy. Click, click. I'm out of here.
Spoilers for episode 3 of the HBO show, y'all. No, yeah, I'm just kidding.
Some real interesting additions they've made to the live action version.
Yeah, no, no Bill side story. This time it's Ellie's got a glider.
It's just 60 minutes of her in the air. That's it. Yeah. That's the entire
episode.
It's just
episode. Like, I feel so free and unencumbered by all the sadness.
What trauma? It's below me now.
It's all below me now. I'm free as a bird.
Look, Joel, I did go to space. Whee! Credits.
Anyway, Ghost of Yote, October 2nd, PlayStation 5, be there. Christian Spicer, what is your story of the week?
There are two that I really want to talk about, but I will play the game and I'll only pick one. And because I don't know, Matt and Jeff, I don't know if you know this, but today is officially Switch 2 day. I don't know if you guys know that.
Just like yesterday and just like tomorrow.
Every day for the last 5 years, I feel like has been Switch 2 day.
Hey, we should actually check in on that because we haven't mentioned, you know, this week also was U.S. pre-orders. Matt, did you get a pre-order?
I did. It was a journey up here in Canada, but I did manage to lock one down.
Oh, you're Canadian. I apologize. Mm-hmm. I assumed. You got one. You got one locked in. Your confidence actually going to be real.
I did because I tried online, failed. Walmart Canada launched at midnight. That was miserable. It sold out in like 3 seconds.
Yeah.
Best Buy the next morning, failed miserably. At that point, I was like, all right, I have to go into the nearest GameStop. Ran in there, waited in a line for over an hour. There was like 50 people in line, managed to lock down a bundle.
Nice.
Only for that night for GameStop to be like, all right, folks, we're going to launch a tracker. You're going to be able to see all the stores that have bundles still available for pre-order. 3 days later, both of my neighboring GameStops still had pre-orders. Didn't have to run out right that minute. But yes, I did lock the bundle down. Very excited.
Well, congratulations. That's cool. You got the old school experience of actually
being into... Man, you got a bundle and healthcare? That seems unfair.
It does. It does.
There was an interesting moment that I feel like only happens when you do go in store, where there's this massive line of people waiting and hoping to be next to you know, pre-order their console. And this dude walks up and spends 10 minutes asking the GameStop employee about what the Switch 2 game key cards will be made of and whether he thinks they're going to taste the same, which was just a joy to listen to. Mm.
All the burning questions that you got to answer before you put your pre-order in.
Yep.
Christian, did you, I mean, I already know the answer to this, but for the benefit of our listeners, did you get a pre-order?
I did. It also was a wild ride down here in the crummy states. All of the websites were supposed to go live at midnight. None of them seemed to. There were online.
Target was the one. Target actually went live at midnight.
And Target is like, you got it. Click pay. Okay, no, you here you didn't. Go. Just kidding.
Wasn't it fun to feel that you did for that couple minutes, though?
It's still in your cart. You still click. Go ahead now. Click pay.
No. But isn't this a delight? Like isn't this process just a roller coaster ride of emotions?
Okay, look, that was on us. Use Apple Pay. We've already pre-populated it. We actually got rid of your saved credit card information. Just use Apple Pay. Click. It's going to go through. It's going to go. Oh, he fell for it again. What an idiot. Anyway, it's out of your cart now and we're sold out. So kiss my butt. Kiss.
Hope the target you're enjoying is you, trying Rube. That Walmart website. Whee!
Yep. And so we had some fun texts between you and myself, Jeff. I had one going with my little brother as well and a few other folks that were like all in the hunt. What ended up working for me, I was in the Walmart queue, and the common knowledge for that is always like, don't leave, right? If you leave, you're refreshed. Like Ticketmaster and all these websites have you trained that if you even breathe on the website and you're in the queue and then you're out, sorry, you're in the back of the queue, you messed up. And then my little brother texted me and he was like, hey, hard close out of the Walmart queue, like completely close the tab down, close the browser, relaunch, you'll get right in. And I was like, what do I have to risk at this point? Did it? Hard closed, relaunched, went to Walmart. It was like, you have 10 minutes to complete your purchase. And I was like, sweet baby colored eggs, Jesus, this is working.
Yeah.
Click, click, done. Confirmation email. Cross my heart, cross my pinkies. I think it happened, Jeff. I think it happened.
Yeah, I got one as well. It was a real fun time. Just not knowing. And then the text messages of like, I finally got through on Target. My friend Ben Yank, I got one. I did that too. And then they sent me an email saying, nope, sorry, your order's been canceled. And so just sitting there watching my inbox going, is that going to happen to me too? It's just so much fun.
Until June 5th, that is happening, right?
Oh, like totally. That. Yes.
Yeah. It At does any point, seem like
that
though,
email could arrive and be like, nah, nope.
Yeah. Yeah, it does seem like, and per Matt's story as well, it does seem like Nintendo actually does have more stock this year. Like the websites were horrible. I realize companies, I guess, just don't want to spin up the bandwidth. You would think that by 2025, we would know how to do these things. We still don't. We being companies that run websites whose business it is to sell us these things, they still don't. But I went in for the bundle, Mario Kart World bundle. A new Pro Controller, like the Pro Controller 2, whatever it's called, a case, and then I had already had an order for the faster memory card. So in for a penny, in for a pound. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm doing it, Jeff.
I figure I could pick up all that other stuff. I was just trying to just get stuff into my cart and go. Just get the one thing, the bundle, boom, bam. All right. Anyway, that was a side tangent. What is your story of the week?
My story of the week is I was not able to pre-order. No, just kidding. I tried and tried and tried. Matt brought it up about the game key cards. We have not talked about this on this show, and I want to talk about it on the show. It's been out there since Nintendo kind of unveiled the Switch 2 proper, this idea of game key cards, which are, dear listener, a physical copy of the game, like the box that you know and love, that you've seen, that has Switch 2 in red on the top really big, then a little bit of the game's artwork, and then a lot of lettering at the bottom also that says, like, this is a game card, you have to download it, and then, like, somewhere in there you can see Samus's little head. You know, like, that beautiful box that they have, and then you open that box, and inside of that there's no instruction booklet or anything else, but then there's the little game, my kids call them chips, the little, you know, Switch chip, the little game cart, little cartridges in there. And then on that game cart, nothing, basically nothing, is essentially an encrypted code, an NFT, if you will, that
I won't.
A Nintendo fungible token?
Yeah, Nintendo.
There you go.
That you put into your Switch 2, and then it validates this code. Like, yes, you have a copy of this game, and then you download the game onto your system, not onto that card. Just, you're not as if, you know, you're not, it's not like a USB thing where it's like blank and then hits the servers and now you have it on this thumb drive. It is, and yes, I am old enough that I have a stack of thumb drives next to me also, just in case anyone wonders why I have thumb drives.
He's a prop comic now.
Give me a watermelon. And so you still then download it onto the system memory itself, be it the built-in or your express memory card that you've added.
Almost like the physical chip cart thingy itself is utterly superfluous to the entire process.
Yes, I set this up with a very kind of snarky, flippant tone, but I'll be honest, of the available all digital futures that we are quickly hurling towards in infinite space, I think this might be my favorite the ones we've seen yet versus when my kids, you know, we got Just Dance 2025. I think it was like a Christmas present or whatever it was. And it's the box and inside is just a code. It's like you still have almost all the same physical waste. And inside it's like a download code. And now that download code is used once and you're done versus these game key cards. You can resell, you can trade, you can give to a friend. Yes, they didn't have to download it. Like someone basically said, this the closest thing we have to this right now is most Xbox physical releases where you buy, you know, Indiana Jones or whatever it is on disc. And that has like 4 gigs on it, you know, and then you put it in and you have to do the 120 gig full download. And so while I would prefer games like Cyberpunk on Switch 2 and Nintendo's own games to have the whole game on the cart, I think in this world of a, like I said, quickly approaching all digital future, the ability to be able to still trade, you can still sell this back to GameStop or whatever, give to a friend. I think I like it in that context, Jeff.
Well, the part you've left out so far in your description is that it's still subject to all the bad stuff about digital only, which is, yes, you can sell it, you can give it to a friend, except for the day when they no longer offer that title to be downloaded.
Yes.
It doesn't matter if you've got the little chip card physical thing, because that thing is bupkis. It doesn't do anything. And so we're still in that, you know, held hostage by their desire to host the files on a server somewhere so that you don't actually have something in perpetuity because you don't actually have something.
Which is every game you download digitally. Again,
true.
It is bad, but maybe a less bad because there's a way that you can trade it easier than the current version. I don't know.
Before I hand it over to Matt for his opinion, I will just say that the reason I think this might actually be worse, although I'm sympathetic to your position here, the reason I think this might actually be worse is because it is now eliminating the definition of having a physical version of it. You know what I mean? It's not, oh, there's a box with a key code in it. It's literally like a faux cartridge. It's a cartridge in appearance only.
It's a cartridge in a pear tree. Is what it
that's
is.
That's right. That's right. And if your true love gave you one, they're giving you nothing. Nothing. Which is why they have to give it to you 12 times. No. The problem with this, I think, is that it just abstracts the entire notion of owning something physically. It's just like, look, you've got it. No, you don't. I don't know. What do you think, Matt?
I understand, Christian, your side with this is giving a digital game a physical presence so that, yes, you can trade it in, resell it, do whatever you want with it. But it also, it just seems like this weird in between physical and digital where it's both and neither at the same time. It feels like physical with extra steps. So what I fail to understand is like, if I go out and I buy Yakuza, which I'm staring at constantly, and I want on that in that red box and that, you know, thumbnail sized art that I'm going to get on that box. If I buy that with a game key versus buying it digitally, there's no difference between those two whatsoever at that point. Instead, the only thing is I have that key card, which then I will be able to resell and so on and so forth. But I don't understand what the actual overall point is. You're not saving any money doing either one. You like you were saying, you still have the physical waste. That's still a thing. And yes, physical collectors, that's fantastic. The physical games need to be preserved. There's all these things that need to happen, but none of that does anything. If I give this to my brother, we're on a flight together, and he's like, hey, do you have Yakuza? I want to play Yakuza. Yeah, bet, here you go. I hand it to him. He's nowhere closer to playing Yakuza than he was 5 minutes ago.
But if you hand it to him not on a flight, he is. That's the difference.
If between... you have a Wi-Fi signal that's fast and strong enough to be able to download the rest of the thing before whatever else is about to happen. It's this weird, very Nintendo toy company-esque take on digital games that, like, yes, I appreciate it that you can resell it and trade it, but at the same time, it's just really weird, in my opinion.
It's also interesting to note that Nintendo doesn't seem to be doing this themselves with any of their first party stuff. There's been a number of news stories this week about how Nintendo has confirmed that if you buy the physical version of Donkey Kong Bonanza, Kirby and the Forgotten Land, even the Zelda, up-resed versions for Switch 2, Mario Kart World, Super Mario Party Jamboree, all of those are actually going to be fully on the cartridge, just as you might expect from a Switch 1 game. It is the third parties so far that seem to be doing this way. So you're right, the Yakuza Zero Director's Cut and a bunch of others, that, you know, Bravely Default, Sonic Cross Shadows, Hitman World, Street Fighter VI, a lot of those third-party games are doing it this way. So it remains to be seen if Nintendo is actually going to embrace this way of going about it, or if it will, you know, be just – not that that makes it any better, but it is interesting to me that Nintendo ain't doing it so far, at least.
So I looked up Indiana Jones and the Great Circle on PS5. The physical edition only has 20 gigs of data on the disc.
That's because of how much more efficient PlayStation is than Xbox.
The internet is required to download the rest of the game. And so we I mean,
it's not new, I guess. And we know that to be true, but it doesn't make it better. I don't know.
I feel like for me, the trade-off is, or the thought process is, what do I like better? The convenience of all digital, and I'm getting rid of, I'm ruling out the whole game on the cartridge thing, just between these two, like all digital convenience. I have my whole library with me wherever I go, but I can't do anything with I can't give anyone else that game or sell that game. It's just mine. Or the inconvenience of physical media, but the ability to still, as long as the servers are up, you know, resell it or give it to somebody. And so I don't know. For Switch 1, I was almost 100% physical. If a physical edition of the game came out, I got the physical cart. I dealt with the annoyance of changing the cart or doing whatever.
That's my biggest issue with this. Why I'm like, why? Why am I going to even care? I want to play the thing and, oh, did I have the cart in hand's reach? That to me is the deal breaker.
And then the last thing that I like about these, and also Indiana Jones and the Great Circle on PS5 and Xbox and stuff like that physically, is I'm old, but I think it makes a better gift. I think there is some, instead of like a piece of paper that says, go download the thing. Here's a Steam gift card. Go download the thing.
Christian just wants to unwrap something.
Yes.
Yes.
Give me a box to unwrap
with a thing in it that I got to stick in a thing. Even though the thing I'm sticking in
idea of a present, I want a present.
Yes.
I also think this is just a victim of this weird point that we're at in gaming right now between physical and digital, where like this digital, all digital future is hurtling towards us. There's a lot of people who are trying to preserve physical. That's fine. But because of the brick and mortar, because of the physical production of all these things, the prices, whether you buy physical or digital, are still equal. Right. Yeah. If they came with these game keys and they were like, they are $5 cheaper or $10 cheaper because you're not getting the entirety of the product, and we're matching the digital price, for example, which is $10 cheaper, then maybe I can start to see some argument for this kind of system. But if price parity is across the board for all of these things and you're paying what you're paying regardless, then you're just getting it with extra, you're getting the digital copy with extra steps. That's like if there were to be a final breaking point where digital across the board was $10 cheaper than their physical counterparts, then again, I can start to see an argument here, but I just don't know if that is something that's going to happen.
I think that's a really good point. And it's something that people have just stopped talking about because we had this little moment of time where digital storefronts were, it's, I don't know how long it's been now. What, five? Everything's 5 years ago, right, Christian?
5 years ago, 5 years ago. 2020, back when everything was rosy.
Nothing was wrong in 2020.
Times.
5 years ago.
We can all remember where we were because we were only in one place. the time when digital storefronts were sort of just coming into being, there was that, it's going to end up being cheaper. We're going to pass the savings on to you. We don't have to mark it up for the brick and mortar place to keep the lights on in a physical location. That was the promise, and it just has not come to pass at all. I mean, there has been variable pricing because of digital and places like Steam. I think that's wonderful in that it has opened up this whole variable pricing model for independent game publishers, mostly to price their games however they want and find niches. And I think that's been great, but it really has not been a, hey, if we don't have to print up the box for you, we'll knock a few bucks off the price. That just has not happened at all. And it's a bummer that that's the case. I remember that whole debate at the time of like, you're going to put these brick and mortar places out of business because it's going to be cheaper to buy them digitally. And they went, no, we won't, because we'll just keep that money. Thank you.
We're still going to put them out of business. We're just not going to make it
just
cheaper for you.
That way.
Not by making it cheaper. And we're not an idiot.
Oh, man.
We're actually going to spend the last 18 months telling you that games have been too cheap for too long. We're going to raise. Remember that game, that Nintendo game you bought literally 5 years ago? It's most expensive now.
It's actually more now than it was then.
We upped it. Remember your PS5 you bought at launch? Buy one now. More expensive.
Well, at least it's on my cartridge. Nope. Actually, it is. It is for Zelda.
It is for
all
Zelda.
All right.
Yeah.
Hey, we got to take a quick break. This is too much fun. We got more stories of the week coming up, but we're going to take a break for a sponsor. We'll be right back after these messages. This episode of DLC is brought to you by Green Chef. It's springtime, the perfect time to refresh your meal routine with dietitian-approved recipes from Green Chef. Perfect for supporting your wellness journey. Featuring fresh, organic, seasonal produce with 100% responsibly sourced proteins crafted to help you feel your best. Christian, I know you are a vegetarian and you have a hard time sometimes finding stuff that not only suits your diet, your preferred diet, but actually tastes good too.
And I think that's a struggle for a lot of folks, especially when they first become vegetarians. If you're so used to just like, oh, I make this chicken breast and this broccoli, and now I get rid of the chicken breast, I just eat broccoli? Like, that's not delicious. But you could be eating chickpea and kale stuffed peppers, and they are delicious. And you don't need to worry about what's a main course for a vegetarian meal. Yeah. You don't need to try to figure it out all by yourself, because they give you everything you need to create a delicious, complete meal. And it takes that stress and worry out of, how am I going to get everything I need? How am I going to have something that's filling and delicious? And they do all the work for you, and you just get to pick what you want. And it's so easy.
Yeah, they have over 80 weekly options. So it's not just for vegetarians, but it does mean that Green Chef can fit meals into your lifestyle, whether you're into Mediterranean flavors, gluten-free eats, plant-based meals, protein-packed dishes. I'm not a vegetarian. Oh, I love the selection at Green Chef because there's something for everyone. They even have their new Heat and Eat meals where you can enjoy delicious, wholesome meals in just 3 minutes. So you spend less time in the kitchen and more time, you know, whatever you want to do, playing video games. They've got options for gut and brain health, calorie smart choices, and more. You know, they get you a salad that's ready in 5 minutes, a protein packed breakfast. They got smoothies to fuel your day. Green Chef has you covered for the busiest days. Their meals are made with real clean ingredients so you can build lasting healthy habits without the hassle. And that's honestly what I like most about it, because I want to know that I'm giving my children not just something that they're going to enjoy the flavor of, but something that's actually going to be the right thing to be putting into their bodies. Plus, with their week-to-week flexibility, you can adjust your plan anytime to fit your schedule. And I love that, where if we're going to be out of town or we need to pause for a week, do something else, get more meals that week, fewer meals that week, it's so flexible and so easy. Make this spring your most delicious yet with Green Chef. Head to greenchef.com/50DLC and use code 50DLC to get 50% off your first month and then 20% off for 2 months with free shipping. That's code 50DLC
at greenchef.com/50DLC. Okay, my story of the week. You guys have left me. I'm curious what Christian wanted to talk about as his other one. But what I'm going to talk about is Michael Bay doing a video game movie.
That was the other one. That was the other one.
We talked about this a little on the Filmcast, the other show I do about movies and TV shows. Michael Bay is set to direct an adaptation of one of Sega's most storied franchises. A video game that when you think of it, you go, oh my gosh, I just hope a director can get this right. I don't want them to miss any of the nuance of the story, of the characterization, of the incredible plot that I was pulled through as I plunked my quarter to play Outrun. It's Outrun, everybody. A game that has no plot at all. It's literally a red car with some music playing.
And it's a Ferrari with some of the best video game music of its era.
Indeed.
Ever created.
But other than that, it isn't anything, right? I'm not slagging on Outrun. I love Outrun. I'm slagging on the idea of you needing to license Outrun to make a movie about cars. That's the, like, Michael Bay could make a movie about cars that would be probably pretty fun to watch. He knows how to shoot cars going fast. We've seen him do it many times. And it's just wild to me that in this year of our Lord 2025, we must have Outrun be licensed in order to have Michael Bay make a movie about cars. Matt, discuss.
I can't decide whether the lack of a story in Outrun is a good thing or a bad thing, because it kind of gives him carte blanche. Mm-hmm. Do you remember Gran Turismo? Right?
The movie?
Based on a true story.
Exactly. But like, I'm kind of hoping this is more Twisted Metal, which is at least fun in its adaptation, than Gran Turismo, which I feel like everybody's collectively forgotten about, regardless of the quality of the movie. It is interesting to see how much Sydney Sweeney is all over video game adaptations.
Yeah.
It was just, I think, this week that we got the confirmation that she's also going to be in Split Fiction, that film
adaptation. Yeah, because she did a comic book adaptation and was like, get me out of here.
it's interesting that she's all over the video game stuff. I'm curious. Michael Bay makes fun enough movies. I'm sure there's going to be lots of explosions. I'm sure at least 27 cars will blow up over the course of that movie. I don't know. I don't really know.
Yeah. I mean, Christian, sounds like you're positive on this one.
I will say a very broad spoiler for a thing that I won't even say what is. So if you don't even know the context, it won't matter to you. But if you do, you'll be like, I know that reference. And you're Leonardo DiCaprio in your chair right now. And in some ways, Jeff, I feel like Outrun the movie feels like it could be Kool-Aid the movie. Mm. Someone had a movie they wanted to make.
That's right.
And now we make it Outrun.
That's exactly right. I think that's kind of how I was presenting it. Like, Michael Bay wants to make a movie about cars going fast. And 15 years ago, it would be called Fast Cars the Movie, or Fast
Gone
and,
in 60
I don't know,
Seconds. Yeah.
Yeah. Fast and maybe Furious? Maybe. I don't know. Something. They would come up with a title and a story that they wanted to make because it's a movie. And nowadays, it's just we can't make anything unless we license IP, which I don't necessarily have a problem with. I love the fact that there's going to be a Split Fiction movie, for example. I think that's awesome. I heard that Expedition 33, Clair Obscur, is going to be a movie. What a great product, IP.
Yeah, that was announced before the game even came out. I think it was Variety wrote that up. Yeah.
Incredible. That's great. Like, yeah, make that. Last of Us, incredible. Awesome. It's just the where it goes into the realm of the absurd is what Matt was talking about, where it's like it's just there's not a there. It's like there's no characters in Outrun. There's no characters.
The there is in the title, Outrun. You have to get away, and the game is you're getting you have to make it coast to coast. It's Outrun 2 coast to coast. But you have to make it across the map. you have to make it across the map before time runs out. And the character, as an old who loves Outrun and the 3DS, was it M2, whoever redid it, beautiful. The character is one of the most iconic characters in early games. is, I'm assuming, Sydney Sweeney's character, is the blonde woman.
Oh, she's not
going to
be in it. She's just producing it.
Oh, she's just producing it. Well, it could be her ponytail. She could pull it off. Is you know, these characters that, again, for that era of video games were Gordon Freeman, right? You put yourself.
No, they're not. Gordon Freeman. Gordon Freeman is an actual character. The characters in Outrun, which, by the way, I will give you my entire life savings if you can name the character in Outrun, because it doesn't have a name and you don't know it.
Brown haired guy, blonde haired woman.
Exactly.
Ferrari F-350. Ooh, I'm going to look that up. What the Ferrari is. I'm going to look that up.
I think we may be missing a critical factor here in that Michael Bay is known for a specific series about cars where the human characters were much more hated than the cars themselves. Mm. Could this be a Cars situation where the people don't matter because the characters are the cars?
He's finally found his perfect vehicle.
There you go.
Yeah. He's finally found the property that will have no one asking why weren't there people in this?
Just cars.
People? Didn't you see the back of their head with the wind blowing in their hair? That would actually be an awesome movie. Give me a whole movie where we never find out anything about the people. It's just really sick car chases.
Mm-hmm.
Outrun the movie.
Now we have an idea.
The original one was a Testarossa. I apologize. Outrun 2 had 7 different Ferraris licensed for
Again,
the game.
Outrun 2. That's a movie. All right. Let's get into it. Enough news. Michael Bay, knock Outrun out of the park. Make me eat my words. I want to be there and feel like I'm sitting in that old arcade cabinet with the steering wheel.
Hey,
give me that sensation, Michael Bay. Do it.
If at the end of Outrun, your Ferrari transforms and Bumblebee rolls in, I'll be like, Michael Bay, you done us dirty. You done us good. You know, like, he's going
to
get
that to happen. No,
he's going to get it. He's going to get
it. Michael Bay cinematic universe. What? Come on.
they all relate, Jeff, all the way down. Yeah. It's Michael Bay
all the way down. All right. Let's get into it and talk about the games we have been playing in a segment we call The Playlist.
Ooh, what you playing this week? Tell us. Ooh, what you playing this week? Tell us on The Playlist.
All right. I feel like we should start with the big release. Well, there's 2 huge releases this week, that's for sure. But let's talk about the one that has been mentioned already, Clair Obscur, Expedition 33. All 3 of us have been playing it. This is a game that I have been greatly anticipating. And I know, Matt, I believe you played this for review ahead of time. You've completed the game, yes?
Yes, yeah, I'm done.
What do you think of Clair Obscur, Expedition 33?
I remember seeing this for the first time and kind of being, you know, blown away in its first trailer and kind of thinking, this cannot be that good, you know? Like, it cannot be everything that it's selling here. And kind of coming into it, booting it up for the first time, I was like, all right, if this hits like a solid 7.5 out of 8, it's pretty, looks cool. Story design seems interesting. I'm there. What I wasn't expecting is to have my current game of the year and possibly one of my favorite games ever coming out of this experience.
Wow.
The fact that this was a small indie team out of France, their first proper game as a studio, that could hit these highs. I cried like 4 times, and like for the first was in the first like 30 minutes with the prologue. The world is gorgeous. The characters are stellar. They're written like actual emotionally, you know, intelligent people. But at the same time, there's hilarious moments throughout that genuinely had me cracking up at a time where it does the Scrubs thing where you go from laugh crying to actual crying and then back and forth more than a couple times. Combat is fantastic. I fear I've heard people refer to it as a turn-based Souls-like, and I do see that kind of, you know, fingerprint there with how much the parry and the dodge system come together to really make a turn-based fight feel very tactile. I cannot sing enough praises about this game. I reviewed it for But Why Though, and I just sat, I lived in this game. Once I started, I could not put it down. And it got to the point where I finished it and I was like immediately back in. There's so much more that I want to see there. There's so much more side content and it's interesting. I am absolutely enamored with it. And it feels like this year I'm like, all right, Pirate Yakuza, game of the year. Never mind, Monster Hunter Wilds, game of the year. Hold on, no, never mind, Split Fiction, game of the year. Wait, Kingdom Come, and then Clair Obscur, Expedition 33, so heavily puts itself into first place by a country mile that, like, I will be genuinely surprised if anything overtakes the spot for me by year's end. It's early, things could happen, but this game is truly one of a kind. I've seen people showering its praises constantly, getting into turn-based games because of it. It is so, so special, and like, hats off to the team that put this together, because it's astounding. I can't believe how much I'm in love with this game.
I'm right there with you, man. I absolutely love this. I have not finished the game. I played a bunch of it, but I can't wait to play more. This feels like the kind of game that Square Enix refuses to make now. You know, it's the like, oh, this could, you could make a Final Fantasy like this. You could. You choose not to, because you believe that it has to all be real-time combat in order for the sales to be X, Y, or Z. Well, Expedition 33 has hit 1 million in its first week. I think that's a pretty good sign that this thing is catching on. I hope this game continues its momentum. You're absolutely right that it's stunning that a small team was able to make this, which this feels like a game that was made by 300 people. And that is not just because the visuals are so stunning, so beautifully realized. Moments are directed in a cinematic way that shows care to each and every moment. Each and every cutscene is meticulously crafted. It is not something that just thrown together. The character models are amazing. It's amazing they got Robert Pattinson for this part, guys. I'm shocked. I don't know how they got him to sign on. No, I'm joking, but the main character, or the one of the main characters, looks shockingly like Robert Pattinson to me. But I also love that there's an entire design layer here that is so unique. It is so unlike any other fantasy world. It's really carved out a very French, a very, I think, a very authentic to who these developers are. But, you know, there's not a single monster or enemy that you encounter that I feel like I've seen before. They're all these new, fresh ideas, this visual palette that is different than anybody else is working with. And the fundamental premise of this game is so immediately interesting. It does what great fiction does, which is it hooks you with a question. There's a mystery that immediately, right from the gate, it's, all right, who's this paintress? Why is everybody dying every year? How are they going to stop it? What will they find when they try to go attack her and stop this from happening? These are questions that I immediately want to answer. And so many video games forget that fundamental tenet of storytelling, which is draw me in immediately. Give me a question. Put that carrot on the end of the stick and make me ask, why am I here? What do I need to know? What will drive me forward? They do that so well. So from, and the way the plot is delivered is so sophisticated. It's very adult. It does not feel like I'm being talked down to. We don't have just like, you know, moments of exposition to just lore dump on you. It feels like a lived world. It's a sad world, right? It is an emotionally taxing world. It's this mopey French, you know, world of ennui. But it is an interesting place to be in all the time. And then you go into the, you know, farther, you get in your boat in the first few minutes of the game, and now you're in an even more interesting, mysterious world. So I love how everything is conveyed. It really, to me, it really, I think, embarrasses the latest Final Fantasy games. I, you know, 7 Remake, I think, is excellent, but 16, I feel like if you look at the way that story is presented, it again, to me, I'm going to say a harsh thing, feels amateurish when compared to Clair Obscur. And I haven't even gotten to like the playing of the game, which, as you said, Matt, is also just a blast. We can do turn-based combat like in the old days, and it could still be so fun. The like rhythm game challenge of every fight, the way that I'm queuing up attacks and alley-ooping to myself in really, really fun ways. These systems that layer onto each other, the way that I am, you know, learning these new spells, slotting them in, augmenting them in really fun ways, and then creating systems where like I'm excited about how I'm going to set this up and what is going to be required of me. I have a spell where as long as that character doesn't get hit, she's going to rock your world every single round. So now it's super incumbent upon me to nail those parries and dodges. Like all that stuff is so fun. Learning these really, I thought, for me, challenging rhythms that the bad guys, well, they'll get to a point where it looks like they're about to hit you, but they wait an extra second too long and it dodges too soon. All of that stuff, so much fun. So like every part of this game fits together. I only have a few nitpicks, but I'm going to hand it over to Christian before I get to my nitpicks, to say what you think, because I'm very curious if this one, I know you don't tend to be the turn-based guy. So I'm curious what you thought of Clair Obscur Expedition 33.
I will echo what both you and Matt said. I think I also have some nits, but I certainly don't want to start there. I think it's a triumph. I think what makes the turn-based combat so compelling in this game is what Matt mentioned, the Souls-like, or whatever you want to call it, but the active part of it, that it is those puzzle pieces that you described, Jeff, but it also is engaging in the moment to moment with the QTE, whatever you want to call it, but the way that they implement the QTE for you doing some of your attacks, not all of them. It's not as if, oh, every attack I now need to do these God of War-esque QTEs, but some of them you're going to be required to do it. So that keeps you actively engaged. It keeps the controller in your hand. And then the dodge and parry windows and the rewards you're given for those dodges and parries, where you see down the left side of your screen, you know, the combat order of what's going to be coming next. And there are times where I feel like it's beneficial to have the enemy attack, because by doing a successful parry or a successful dodge, I'm able to then power up this thing that I'm going to do next. So I find all of that to be really engaging in a way that, you know, some of the older turn-based games don't captivate or capture my imagination the same way. I will say I've probably played the least out of the three of us. I think I'm like 4.5 hours in. I feel like I'm, you know, maybe 15% through the game if I had to guess based on where the story is, but I'm not sure. And then I feel like also it still manages to capture what I think Square Enix has done very well recently, is the combat flourishes. The combat is exciting to watch on screen, but because you're actively doing it, it's more than just put controller down, push A, watch pretty thing. You're still engaged with it, but the flourish, the things that are happening on screen are really, really fun and beautiful to see. And the other thing that I think really blew me away about the game, that maybe I just wasn't paying attention during previews, that I wasn't aware of, tiny, maybe like 30-minute first hour spoiler, you go into an overworld. Like there's, yeah. The, there's the like,
and it's the done overworld so cool. Map.
So it's cool. So cool.
It's so cool, because before that moment, it doesn't tell you, it doesn't start that way. It doesn't show you that you're going to have that. And I'm playing, and all of a sudden I was like, what? Oh, hell yeah. Like now I, you know, you have that, yeah, kind of, here's the big world. Here's where you're going to go. Here's how you're going to engage with stuff. And then in that, it throws another little like, here you go, buddy, like go eat moment of, it's not just the overworld that is used for traversal. You still have the fun combat. You still have the fun areas that you can explore. And then when it gets into those more narrow, traditional third person action moments, it funnels you back into the over the shoulder camera, and it just does it It does it really, really, really well. I only have two nits so far, and they're small and quick. One, I think it's a little too bloomy. Whether it's Unreal Engine 5 or whatever it is very bloom lighting everywhere, which I don't love. And then two, I'm playing this on PC on a very beefy GPU on a 5080, and I find the cutscenes to be stuttery, jittery, like not.
There's a fix.
The gameplay is great.
There's a fix for that already.
An official fix or an unofficial?
No, unofficial fix. So okay. It also has a real issue, or at least as of this recording, has a real issue handling super ultra wide displays. It works perfect until you get into combat, and then once you get out of combat, it's all borked. So I was like, oh no, that was like in the first tutorial where you start on that rooftop, and then you go into the first combat. She's like, let's train, and you get into combat. And I was like, this game is gorgeous, and I got into combat, and then it's like, oh no, the head is cut off of all. It's like zoomed in. I was like, oh no, reboot. Oh okay, it works again. Get into combat, head cut off. No, so I went Googling. And somebody has already uploaded to GitHub a fix, but the fix doesn't just do that. It also unlocks the frame rate on cutscenes, so you no longer have any stutters. So it's a GitHub, like, you got to do it.
Text me, bro. Text me.
Yeah, I will. It couldn't be easier to install. You literally just like unzip the thing into the subdirectory.
So I have one nit. It's too bloomy.
And I will say, though, there is an option that like has like this filter effect on it. So I wonder if you were to turn that off, that may alleviate some of the bloominess, because there is like this like retro vignette type filter that is by default auto enabled in the options. So I wonder if turning that off would help at all. I left it on because I kind of liked the way that it looked, but
I also like the way it looks, but I can understand. I see what you're saying. Yes, it's not out of the blue that
you can't not see it.
Yeah.
It's very bright in my view. I think what you're saying,
I think for myself, the most nitty thing, and I did have like a couple small ones, but the like a bestiary missing is something that I noticed very quickly. And the fact that like I couldn't access any enemy information in combat, because at the beginning it doesn't seem like that big of a deal, but as you progress further in and you start getting into resistances or enemies that absorb certain elemental attacks, not having that information on hand once I've already encountered the enemy did prove to be annoying at some points, where I accidentally used the wrong spell on the wrong enemy, because there's some that are similarly colored that I'm like, oh no, I just fed that guy so much HP, I did not need to do that.
And then the
lip syncing, I think just because they motion capped with French performers. So when you're using the English, like the English default language, the lip syncing is off quite considerably more than often than it's not. So those are the only two things that kind of really stuck out to me. But like they kind of wash away so quickly, in my opinion, just because every time you expect this game to do something traditionally RPG, it goes in a different direction, or it does it in a way that's interesting. Like even like the fact that like, you know, you guys were talking, Jeff, you were kind of mentioning the fact that like the story, the paintress and everything, how it grabs you. She's not this like mustache twirling villain that you're like immediately like, oh, come on. Like obviously evil. Like what's going on? There's so much intrigue in every part of it. And I kept waiting for it to slip, whether it was an enemy design or boss encounters or story. It's just so ambitious all the way through that it just kept getting better. That the things that bothered me faded away so quickly that I was just, and then sometimes, like I said, the bestiary thing would pop up once in a while and be like, oh, come on. But like, it's so incredible what they managed to pull together here in its execution and in its maturity and its emotional availability in its characters, that like the nits for me faded away. I got to the end. By the time I got to the end, I was just like, come on. Like, really? Do you guys did this?
I'm not going to disagree with any of that. I do have new nits, but I do think this game is a triumph. It is such a huge reckon with us as a studio, putting our flag in the sand. Like, look at what we're capable of. Pretty amazing. That said, my nits. I think the menus are atrocious. They are bad. Even though you get to a point where you handle it, but like there are so many things when you first start where I'm like, I'm in this part. Can't I just equip this thing now? No, no, no. You got to back out to here and go and see what you're holding on to in a different way before you can actually, oh, okay, cool, 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 cool. Well, I just looted this really awesome thing that says I can upgrade my weapons to level 3 at camp. Sweet. Okay, well, I'm at camp. How do I do that? Well, you can't yet. You know, later on, it's like there's so many things like that where it's just like, well, that could have just been handled better. And I need a map. I'm sorry. I need a map. There's a map of the overworld only, but I have a terrible sense of direction. And a lot of the areas in this game are circular, which always messes me up. Because I'll be like, oh, cool, here's the way to go. And then I'm like, wait a minute. I've seen this before. I'm back to where I started. What's going on? And literally, I would love, I mean, I do appreciate the fact that there's like no UI on the screen for most of the time. It's this big, gorgeous view of this beautifully rendered world, and I'm just in it. Yes. Great. But if I could put a little mini map in the corner, I would be super happy. Failing that, at least give me a map that I can, you know, push a button and get into so I can see where I am in each area. Like, it's just, it's too confusing for my puny little mind to handle the fact that I'm not really, what's bad about it is it does the traditional JRPG thing of you're in the world, then you get into a fight, and then it goes, and now you're in the fight part of the stage. But then when I come out of the fight part, and I'm there for minutes, you know, I'm doing a thing, and then I come out of it, and I'm like, oh, right, where was I going again? I feel like I'm turned around now because I just was in this fight, and I don't know, was I walking that way? Because there's a cool blue tree was that the same cool blue tree as, you know, it's, I'm the idiot, but like, help me out, game. But again, well, those are minor nits that for a stellar game.
I think some of that might be intentional. Again, I'm 4 hours in, so I played less than you all, so don't tell me how wrong I am narratively, but I think some of that might be intentional based on the premise of what you're doing there. You don't know your way around. You've never been there. And I think they want some level of awestruck or confusion or disorientation. The other side of it, though, that I think, Jeff, I don't know if a map is the answer as much as perhaps better level design or landmarking. Because if you're in a world where you don't need those things, because the example I always use is Left 4 Dead, it does such a good job of pulling you to where you need to go that you think you're figuring it out, but you're not. And there are other games that do that very well. The big open world games are the new Zelda games. You know, they just put places of interest everywhere, so there's no wrong way to go, is right. How they handled it. And I feel like here, maybe they could, they make this whole world, oh God, I think it was an Edge magazine article, probably 5 years ago, Jeff. But it was about, as realism, you know, more realistic looking graphics increase, the more important it is to have level design that still guides a player. And it's talking about the rise of yellow paint and kind of the solves for it. And I feel like this game, it doesn't have a lot of yellow paint, and it also doesn't give you a map.
The level design is a little like spaghetti at the wall. Like, you're kind of, and the thing that it does is that it makes each potential path look like the main path. There are a few times sort of along the way where you're like, this is obviously the way to go. I got lost a bunch of times in some of those spaces as well, because you're like, this 100% needs to be the right way, which means over there is probably a cool item, and then I went the wrong way. So it's one of those things where because so much of it is so visually interesting, and it draws you in almost ad nauseum because there's so much happening everywhere, that it is very easy to get lost. So I do wish that, like, and I figured out that there was a compass way, way, way too late with that like mini UI that you can pull up. But the thing is, it's like, that's not overly helpful when you're there for the first time and you don't know where you're going. But yeah, it is a little much to get lost in sometimes.
Yeah. But again, you know, the only reason that stands out to me is because I just am so excited to go to the next place and want to go to the next place and see the next thing. And it is a very, you know, for the most part, linear game, right? There's optional things and stuff, but you're moving one direction most of the time. And especially when you're inside the, you know, the sub area, there's a way to go. And there's going to be little branching things that lead you off, that give you an item here or there. But mostly it's just one place to go. And I found that many of them are these kind of circular loops where, you know, you can walk down one path and end up back where you started. And it's like, that's just confusing to me.
Expedition 498. This time we turn left.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway. But this game really, my only worry is that, you know, the Grand Theft Autos of the world are coming, and this is early enough in the year that it may not, get the accolades that it deserves at the end of the year. But it really is like just proof that you can make a turn-based grand RPG that's still relevant today, that still feels fresh, that still doesn't feel like, you know, it doesn't feel like a retro game. It feels like a new awesome adventure that has never been done before. And that, you know, these small teams can rock our world still. It's just impressive. Like you said, Matt, so bold on so many levels. Like, the combat is bold. There's these bold ideas, and it keeps changing things up, upping the ante. There's so many really cool concepts from the bad guys of how they operate, and how this you know, this sort of way of approaching defeating a bad guy that you've been doing that's been successful, oh, now this one's going to work completely differently. And they just constantly make you relearn things or try new, not be able to rest on your laurels and do the same combos and attacks over and over. It's just a blast. I love this game so much.
This and Sinners coming out in the same week or same span make me feel like, oh, original art can thrive.
Yeah.
We don't need it to be Outrun, which I am excited about. But like, yeah. You know, original IPs.
Yeah.
Original IPs. Sorry, go ahead, Matt.
No. I hope that the last couple years is a kind of like a wake up call for the industry at large. The fact that we're talking about, you know, Kingdom Come Deliverance 2 is again a smaller team putting together an incredible game. Blueprints, we're talking about again a small indie team, Clear Obscure. Last year's game of the year, Astrobot, a smaller team made on a smaller budget. Like, I hope that these companies, especially PlayStation with the string of live service, whatever you want to call it, I hope that people are looking at this and being like, we can make smaller games that can sell, be critical darlings, that are so widely accepted to both old audiences and new. Like, this is what needs to be the standard, not the 300-500 million games that takes 8 years to make. There's space for those too, but we need more of this AA space to thrive again, because it's been absent for too long.
I agree. And it you know, it's not Wizard Thief Tank. It's, you know, we got awesome classes of people that are doing really cool stuff. Like, every time a new character would enter my party, I'd be like, what can they do? That's awesome. So cool. All right. That's Clair Obscur Expedition 33. I'm sure we'll be talking about it lots more in weeks to come. And we have other huge games to talk about. But we got to take a break for a sponsor. We'll be right back with more of our playlist right after this. This episode of DLC is brought to you by Opera GX. Christian, we've talked about this before. Most web browsers are built for everyone, which means they're tailored for no one. They're generic. They're one size fits all. They're the vanilla ice cream of browsers. Although that does sound delicious.
When it's ice cream, it sounds delicious. When it's your web browser, it doesn't sound delicious. It sounds boring. It sounds like something you can't customize to make your own.
Yeah.
It sounds like something that's built to be a one-stop shop. And that's not what you're looking for.
That's right. I want my browser to be less boring. I want the GX facelift. See, they just gave Opera GX a whole bunch of new cool looks. They've got this sidebar transparency that now provides a more immersive experience. They've got updated mods, this whole new interface that makes browsing your mods and finding new ones easy. They've got a new and improved GX Corner that serves as your gaming hub right inside the browser. This is a browser meant for gamers, with gamers in mind. They've got all the cool stuff, but they've got the ability to take all that stuff away when it's time to game. And that's actually my favorite thing about Opera GX, is you can control how much RAM this thing uses. You keep your system running at peak performance. When it's time to get into a video game, when it's time to put the tabs aside, I don't want to close them. I don't like closing tabs. With GX Control, it lets you limit how much CPU and RAM Opera GX can use, so you can avoid lag and frame drops while keeping your favorite tabs and music running in the background. Pretty cool stuff.
And if you have all your bookmarks and things that you had set up in another browser, and that's what's keeping you from switching over, you can bring all that stuff over. You can quickly import your settings, all that, your bookmarks, all that stuff. You just go into your browser settings, gear icon, synchronization, import bookmarks and settings, import, click away, and you can bring all the stuff you liked about where you were held up before over to your Opera GX browser.
That's the thing. I think people start using a browser and they just get into a rut, and that's just the one they use, and they don't think about the fact that there are actually alternatives. You can realize that your current browser is bad. Get a better one at operagx.gg/DLC. Use our link. It's available right there in the show notes to download Opera GX today. Again, operagx.gg/DLC. Thanks to Opera GX for sponsoring this episode. All right, Matt. Speaking of stuff that is, you know, can be done again, we got another big remaster this week for Sony. Days Gone Remastered. I know you've been playing. What do you think of it?
I don't know yet. I tried to get into Days Gone, and as someone who, you know, who hosts a PlayStation podcast, PlayStation's my go-to place to play. I tried Days Gone when it initially came out and hopped off after 5 or 10 hours. It just wasn't doing much for me. So when this very heavily demanded and very sought after remaster was announced, I was kind of like, okay, I'm going to go in this with an open mind. Maybe it was me at the time of place. Maybe I missed something. Maybe it just wasn't what I wanted at that time. Coming back into it, I still don't know how I feel about it. I think that I've kind of reframed the way that I'm looking at it, where, especially when it initially came out, The Last of Us was still, you know, not too long before it, hitting a lot of the similar story beats, especially in its opening hours. It takes itself very seriously. And I feel like myself now looking at it, almost having to reframe my expectations and treating it like a CW show or like a schlocky B movie, where like, yeah, it's trying to be serious, but it's not landing. So I'm not going to expect that from it. I'm having more fun with it than I did, but it does feel like I'm like trying to work to like the game rather than just enjoying the experience. Something like Clair Obscur, which we just talked a lot about, instantly grabs you and doesn't let go. And I feel like I'm trying to like Days Gone. And I just don't know if I'm there. I'm early in. I'm only about 4 or 5 hours in, so there's plenty more Days Gone to go. I have also played the Horde Assault mode, which is one of the big things that they're talking about with this, which is like, you know, you're load in, you're on a map, and there's enemies coming at you. You got to survive for as long as you can. And that's cool. I have had technical issues where like some of the supply crates, where they kind of reward you for doing stuff, just wouldn't open. At one point, I spent like a minute that you have in between these waves coming at you. I found like a defensible position. There was gates. I planted a bunch of mines on the way in. I perched myself on top of a building with a sniper rifle. I'm like, all right, this next horde, I got him. Like, this is it. And then all of a sudden they all spawned inside in this giant bubble. And there was like all of a sudden 100 enemies inside. And I'm like, none of them even came through the doors. I'm like, there's a massive world out here. Where did you all come from? So like the characters, there's no difference. Like, they're all just skins. It feels like a missed opportunity not to have some sort of multiplayer in that. The fact that I can't, you know, hang out with a friend and go through these hordes feels like a missed opportunity in this space, but it's too early for me to really land on how I feel about it yet. I'm trying to like it. I don't know if I will or if I won't. The lighting is pretty. They've done clearly the work that they've done here. The game looks good. I just don't know if it's going to be enough for people who didn't like this game and I don't know if it's going to be enough to draw new audiences in, especially with how much is going on around it. It kind of leaves me at this point where I'm like, who is this for, and how many people is it ultimately going to connect with? I would love for this to be like the new renaissance for the game, but coming back to it, I don't know if that'll be the case. Well, I mean, we'll see.
Days Gone is such an interesting case study because, you know, obviously we'd heard things about how Sony Bend wanted to make a sequel. They had all these ideas. They were excited about it. And Sony said, no, can't do that. So the idea that they would even come out with this remaster seems a little odd. It's like, well, we don't have any faith in this franchise going forward, but here's, you know, I guess remastering is a sort of low hanging fruit in a certain sense. And you can just, you know, squeeze a little more out of that rock. But it's odd to me that they, I think that you're spot on saying, who's this for, right? Who exactly is this for? And it's the landscape is so crowded right now with these incredible experiences. It just seems like an odd time for this game to reemerge and try to find an audience again. I don't know. It's you want to root for it because it felt like a game that had a lot going for it at the time and was ambitious in its own way and was a labor of love, it sounded like, from the studio, but I don't know. Interesting. All right. Christian Spicer, alongside Claire Obscure, you played the other huge, huge release, the worst kept secret in gaming for the last several months. We knew that an Elder Scrolls IV Oblivion remaster was done. It was supposedly dropping in a fun shadow droppy kind of way. And people had been predicting this is the week. No. This is the week. Well, it turns out this was the week. We got the shadow drop of the announcement and it happening right onto Game Pass immediately. Huge hit, massive, massive success. The Elder Scrolls IV Oblivion remaster hitting Steam, doing bonzo numbers there on Game Pass. People are discovering and or rediscovering this game. I feel like I'm one of the few olds that actually, you know, played through this in its original form. Everybody that I see online is like, wow, I understand why Skyrim, people were excited about Skyrim when it came out because of this game. I'm like, yeah, can we make Morrowind, please? Because I love that game. Can we get a remaster of Morrowind, please? I'm old. A Daggerfall? Anybody? Anybody? Hello? Daggerfall? but yeah, Oblivion is out. You are playing it. Tell me what you think, Christian Spicer.
So I was never the biggest Oblivion fan back when it came out either. I played it. I don't think I finished it. I think I got lost. This game opens up very quickly and in a very big way. You get out of the city sewers and then it's just like, figure it out.
Yeah, it's that classic Bethesda Game Studios moment they always talk about, the emerging into the open world.
Yes, and before several of their games after which, and before the likes of Fallout 4, and it is an older style of game that I think holds your hand less than some of the more modern, even Bethesda Games Studios games do. And so I don't think I ever finished it back in, what was it, 2006? Is it 20?
Yeah, 2006. That's right.
2006. So I'll start with that. For this remaster, it is gorgeous. Again, I'm playing on PC, on NVIDIA-provided 5080. I mean, it looks so good. It doesn't even look like how I remembered Oblivion looking. You know, it's not, oh, this is how Halo always looked. No, it's not. Oblivion never looked like this. Like, this game in screenshots and in video, I think, looks like a modern 2025 game. I think it struggles performance-wise. I'm probably about the same amount of time into Oblivion as I am into Expedition 33, probably maybe an hour less, probably 3 to 4 hours in there. Would be my guess. And it seems inconsistent in terms of as the world opens up, I feel like there's more performance hangs or stutters or frame drops or whatever you want to call them that aren't great. They don't break the game, but it's not the smoothest game I've ever played. The biggest thing for me revisiting this game now, Jeff, you can send your emails to dlcfeedback@gmail.com. Attention, Christian is an idiot. I get it.
We already get a lot of those, by the way.
I know, but I just delete them. This one I'll read. this week I'll read them. I think playing this game post-Avowed, which I loved. Have you finished Avowed? Can we do a spoiler chat?
I have not finished Avowed. Okay. This was my biggest question to you, is that, yes. In the shadow of Avowed, yeah.
So I will be vague still about Avowed spoilers, but Avowed's combat is so good, in my opinion. Its sword and shield combat is great. Its magic system, I think, is fun. Is it more concise than Oblivion's magic system? Oh, God, yes. You know, it's not truncated, isn't the right word, but streamlined, perhaps, is Avowed's versus what you can do in Oblivion. But I find it so much more satisfying. And I also, as the type of gamer I am, Avowed's hub and spoke world and narrative pull that would pull me to the next environment by leaving breadcrumbs to encourage me to revisit old ones. I found that type of exploration to be more rewarding than what even 2006 me thought about Oblivion's of, this is a world you can live in it and it's 30% janky, but when you can create those emergent gameplay moments, they might be amazing. And for whatever reason, that type of gameplay didn't really click with me then, and playing it now, still being that big open world game, combined with its combat feeling like 2006 combat versus Avowed's, I think Oblivion is just a game that is either in 06 or now in 2025, still not for me.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, that's so exactly what I expected, honestly.
Yeah,
because
yeah,
it's true, right? Avowed took that Bethesda melee combat and actually came up with a way to make it feel good. And this Oblivion remaster is not a remake, right? They're calling it a remaster, and it is a remaster in that it is way prettier than it ever was. But it retains everything else, right? It even some of that, you know, that jank you're talking about, they didn't go in and sand down those rough edges. There's a famous voiceover thing where they accidentally put in a guy going, oh, let me do another take on that. And it's like lip synced to the NPC. That's still in the game, right? They didn't fix any of that stuff. And I think a lot of that makes the juxtaposition with Avowed, which is sort of a reaction to all of that storied history of Bethesda Game Studios games, big role-playing games, and finding ways, like you said, to streamline certain things, to make certain things just feel better. And I think Avowed's combat, how tactile it feels, that punctuation that I talked about a lot when we were talking about Avowed when it came out, it goes so far in making the combat feel much better and more fun. And going back to Oblivion, you realize, oh yeah, you're just trying to whack those rats or whatever. Which is why I always played Oblivion as a stealth character, right? Because it's so much fun. And there's no stealth characters in Avowed, really. You can't actually play as a true stealth character in Avowed. So for me, it's sort of, you know, you can sort of reduce the equation, you know what I mean? Like, well, there's this and this and this and this and this. And you just sort of eliminate all those down to the point where it's like, oh, Oblivion is still awesome. Avowed is awesome. And they're awesome for me in different ways. Like, I'm not going to be playing Oblivion like I play Avowed, because the strengths are different. Yes, Oblivion lets you play however you want. But man, I always want to sneak into the dungeon and sneak around and shoot people from afar. And like, it just feels better. My experience of booting up the Oblivion remaster is a really wild one. Because I think the only thing I can compare it to, I guess, is like World of Warcraft. I put so much time into Oblivion. I've said this many, many times. I'm sure people are sick of me saying it. It was the first Xbox 360 game that I got a 1,000 gamer score on. Like, I played every part of that game. I did everything I could do. This was 2006. I have infinite free time. I'm We hadn't even started the Totally Rad show yet, right? I'm just like this guy living in Los Angeles, playing this game and living in this world. And I put so much time and I love into Oblivion, but I haven't played it since. And going back and booting that game up and wandering around and going to these cities, it was really a surreal experience for me. Like I said, the only thing that I can compare it to video game wise is World of Warcraft, where it feels like going back to where I went to high school. And I haven't been home in years. And oh man, yeah. Oh my gosh, I remember that. That's that place where we used to go after school and get the ding-dongs, and we'd all peel the top off our ding-dongs and share that. That's a terrible, whatever. The idea being that...
I mean, you could have said anything there.
I did. I was doing a real memory of the the Quickie Mart that we went after school and we'd all buy ding-dongs. That was a real memory I was using for this analogy. It was
never
a bad
let
idea.
The truth get in the way of a good story, Jeff.
It was a bad idea. The point I'm trying to make is, man, it was wild to have these things spark such nostalgia in me and characters that I would run across and be like, oh my God, I haven't thought about this. If you would ask me to recall it, I would have been unable to. But as soon as that moment happened, I went, oh, I totally remember this. I remember walking into the painting in that dude's house. Oh, I remember that. Like all of getting to Anvil for the first time in Oblivion was like, oh, it's really amazing, that feeling. And to be able to play this at a super high frame rate now on a PC, I'm playing on a PC as well with a fast SSD. So the excruciating constant load times that you would have to deal with in Oblivion are just absent, completely gone. You know, like it's a blink of an eye. Yes, it still loads every time you walk into or out of something or whatever, but it doesn't, you don't care anymore. It's like, oh, what a breath of fresh air this is. So it's still great. It's still as sophisticated and interesting and fun to wander around in that world. And I will always hold Oblivion higher in my heart than Skyrim because of when in my life I encountered each of them. I played all the way through Skyrim. I loved Skyrim. Skyrim was amazing. But I just appreciated the fundamental plot of Oblivion more. Like, there's the gates of hell are opening up. You got to stop it. Like, that's pretty rad. And you know, Patrick Stewart being the guy who sends you on your quest at the beginning, like in 2006, that was a huge deal.
It's like getting Charlie Cox to play the lead in a game today. You know, it's like equivalent.
Or Robert Pattinson. Anyway. It's really cool. It feels like there's been a lot of love put into this. Like, this wasn't a slapdash version where they just like up-resed the textures. Like, it really, you know, they put it on the Unreal Engine to the point where like that Unreal Universal VR mod already people have gotten working on Oblivion remaster. So you can play it in VR right now with 6 degrees of motion. That's pretty rad.
I'm surprised you're doing this show right now, Jeff. I'm surprised you're here.
I could live there. Anyway, I'm a pretty big fan of what they've done. And yes, there are certainly parts of this game that have not aged well. As you say, certain parts do not stand up with direct comparison to Avowed, which is hard not to compare it to because they came out within months of each other. And honestly, that's my biggest question as we sort of close out talking about this game. For something that we you know, had been rumored to be a shadow drop for months now, it seems odd, Matt, to drop Oblivion like 2 days before Clair Obscur hits Game Pass. I know a lot of people have been making hay about this, and I don't want to overstate the, you know, people are like, oh, they're trying to sabotage Clair Obscur. I don't believe any of that, but it does seem odd that this is such a muddled time for Game Pass in particular, muddled is the wrong word, but just crowded with just incredible game experiences between, you know, between Avowed and Blue Prince and South of Midnight and Clair Obscur. And now you have this Oblivion remaster in there as well. It just feels like an odd moment to you know, drink from the fire hose Game Pass wise.
It's just incredibly stacked. And like when you look at April as a whole and kind of the tail end of March, there has been something there every few days. It feels like that is not just an incredible experience, but a Game of the Year contender or whatever else. You would wonder why, especially with, I mean, Expedition 33 is something that I'm sure they couldn't control. It's a third party. But yeah, with Oblivion, why not hold it a few more weeks, like get into May and let it hit then, you know, elongate that time between Avowed and Oblivion a little bit more so that these comparisons aren't as top of mind.
Yeah.
Sure, it's a massive speak to the value case of Game Pass and how much you're getting out of it, but it is a lot at the same time, where it's just like people, you know, the amount of people that I've seen online being like, I started Oblivion, but hold on, Expedition 33 is getting all these cool things, so I'm gonna hop off over to here and then I'll be back to Oblivion.
Yeah.
But then there's more in May and then there's more in June. It's a fantastic time to be a video game enjoyer. There's a lot to play. But it is hard to almost keep up because there's just something always there. There's always something new that's incredible lately. And I feel like this year in particular.
Undoubtedly. Yeah. It speaks to the fact, like, do I want to finish Avowed? Heck yeah, I do. I want to finish South of Midnight. I still have Blue Prince pulling at me. And now Clair Obscur is like this. And so where is even, you know, the hours that I'm spending playing Oblivion, I'm like, I should not be. I've played this game already. I did this, all this stuff.
May is doom.
And May is doom. Yeah, it's just.
I think there's a chance that this.
Sorry, Christian. That was a little late. Sorry, I didn't mean to step on you there.
This might be Game Pass's best year. And maybe some of our audience is screaming like, yeah, no kidding. All these acquisitions are paying off. But yeah, no kidding. All these acquisitions are paying off. Just looking at the games that have already hit Game Pass this year and the games that are still to come that we know about. And then there's a kind of a black hole for the fall, which I don't know if that's going to be another Call of Duty, you know, whatever kind of hits that end of year for them. But man, it's been stacked so far. And first party and third party games that they've secured for the subscription service. I think it's been an incredibly successful year so far.
Really stacked playlist for us today, but I do have one more thing I want to talk about that's really interesting. But we're gonna take a break for one last sponsor. We'll be right back with my final playlist game right after this. This episode of DLC is brought to you by MSI. MSI's latest motherboards, the Intel Z890 and the B860 motherboards, are designed to support the latest Intel Core Ultra Series 2 processors. These are really high-end motherboards that make building your own PC not only easy, but awesome. This is a DIYer's dream. I got to tell you, Christian, I haven't, you know, the last, what, 3 or 4 PCs I've owned, I built myself. It is so much easier now than it has ever been. And these new MSI motherboards, with their easy debug LEDs, you can troubleshoot any problems, any potential issues you may have with their LEDs. They've got one-hand assembly, so you can install your motherboard. It's so much easier than it used to be back in the old day. You know, they talk about one-hand assembly and one-finger installation, which means you don't even need tools. You got M.2 SSDs, the PCIe card installation, all done with a single finger. It's so fast and easy. It makes upgrading quick and easy, hassle-free as well. They got a user-friendly BIOS. This is the way to go if you're thinking about upgrading your PC.
And you mentioned the how easy it is to build, but I want to re-highlight the debug LEDs, because there's nothing more frustrating than building a computer and then you're like, time to turn this sweet baby on. Oh, what didn't work? I have no idea what didn't work. I got to take it back to ground and try to figure things out. And that used to be the case, but now you can troubleshoot easily with the LEDs that can highlight the potential issues. I think that is worth focusing on again, because I think for a lot of folks, that takes a lot of the guesswork out or the anxiety of building your own computer. It's so much easier to do now, and I think everybody should do it.
If you're thinking of upgrading your PC, this is the way to go, and we're going to hook you up with a code that will get you 5% off of the new Intel Z890 and B860 motherboards at the MSI US store. That's us-store.msi.com. The promo code is MSIPOD, M-S-I-P-O-D. Gets you 5% off. Plus, those promotions will stack, or at least that code will stack, with any other promotion that MSI is running. So you can get up to $120 in Steam codes on top of your 5% discount. So it's not mutually exclusive. MSI is built for gamers. It's built for enthusiasts. These are engineered to meet the needs of gamers and content creators. They've got high quality performance, durability, cutting edge features. Get out there, upgrade, and feel how easy it is and the pride you feel of building your own PC. us-store.msi.com, promo code MSIPOD. All right. So, amidst all of this stuff to play, another really interesting experience dropped this week. And I put in some hours, and I can't wait to put in some more hours on it. This is a game called Sunderfolk. If you'll recall, listeners, we talked, I think, I don't know, Christian, what, 2 weeks ago, maybe more, about Dreamhaven's slate. They were talking about some games that they were announcing. Dreamhaven, of course, being Mike Morhaime's sort of solo producing project, where he's put up his own money. This is Mike Morhaime, of course, is the one of the founders of Blizzard, who left Blizzard and founded Dreamhaven to be able to invest in some projects that wouldn't see the light of day otherwise. And a lot of these involve a former Blizzard developers who spun off into their own companies and are doing these interesting projects. And I had complained, whatever it was, 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, that some of the projects that we were seeing announced from that Dreamhaven label, even though they were from different developers, they weren't. It's not just one group of developers making these games. It's different sub companies that are all being funneled through Dreamhaven. That a lot of them felt to me not ambitious enough, not worthy of this this incubator program, this influx of production funds that were there to enable games that probably wouldn't have get made otherwise. At least that's how it was expressed or sold to me. And I was hoping, oh man, we're going to see some really creative, interesting, big swings. Instead of, oh, what had been announced was a couple, like a mobile thing and this a game that looked like it could be something else. And just like felt very samey and not very risk-taking. The exception to that is this game called Sunderfolk, which is a very interesting idea. And honestly, until I played it, I didn't even really quite grok how cool it is. So the idea behind Sunderfolk is a digital tabletop role-playing experience that is intended to be played in the same room, so that it is sitting around a couch, sitting, you know, around sitting around a couch, sitting on a couch, but around a television, you and your friends, with the game on the television and your control method of your character, your own phone. So there's an app that you download. One person buys the game. Right now it's, I believe, $50 on Steam. One person owns the game, and then everybody else downloads a free app on their phones to control their character. And it works similarly to Dungeons and Dragons in that you pick a character, that character has a class, you are role-playing that character, and you're going through this story, and the video game itself, Sunderfolk the video game, serves as the dungeon master. In fact, it very much is embracing the aesthetic of a dungeon master, in that one voice actor, at least now, at least the way the game is now, one voice actor is doing all the characters in the game. So she's like doing voices for the characters, like you would a dungeon master sitting around playing tabletop D&D. So, you know, oh, I'm here, I am, I'm the man, and that kind of stuff. Which is, I think, a kind of a fun, cool aesthetic. But it is, you know, attempting to recreate that tabletop RPG experience where you don't have to have any of your friends play the DM. Everybody gets to play a character, which I think is a very worthwhile goal for a video game to try. So I got that much out of it. But what I didn't understand was this game, Sunderfolk, is really introducing its own rule set, its own universe, its own methodology, where it really leverages the fact that you've got your own screen in your hand that nobody else sees in some very interesting ways. So basically what happens is you'll get some story stuff. Everybody's watching the television on your phone. It'll say, look up at the television now. And you're looking at the television. The television is giving you cutscenes, full cutscenes. The art, I think, is very pretty. It's an anthropomorphized animal world. So everybody is a raccoon or a salamander or whatever, penguin. But, you know, very kind of traditional fantasy setting where people are wearing armor and can cast magic spells. And there's rogues and berserkers and, you know, different spellcasters. And it's a very traditional sort of, you know, there's a bard character. And you pick your class. And so, you're watching a cutscene, a narration. It sets everything up. And then it places you in a location. Tavern, forest, what have you. That is the next location of this story. And that has hexes on it, like, you know, a grid of hexes. And it plays similarly to, you know, Baldur's Gate 3 or any other tabletop-esque turn-based situation where you can move your character, you can make attacks, you can pick things up, you can interact with the world in certain ways. But you do all of that through cards. So the card on your phone, when you want your turn, you can, the turn order is decided by the players. So a lot of it will be discussing, like, who should go, what is the best strategy here? Who should go first? Who should go next? What order do we want to go in? But it's in a full round. So once you've gotten your turn, you have to wait for everybody else to do their turn before you can go again. And the way you do that is you swipe up. So you swipe up, which means, hey, I want to go. And then you have a series of cards that you can choose from. And the cool thing about this rule set is the cards themselves aren't just one thing. They'll have multiple steps in them. So, for example, a single card could be move up to 3 spaces, attack for however much damage, then move 1 additional space. And you have to do them in the order that they happen. But you can choose to do whatever you want. You can skip one of the steps. You can, you know, only move 2 when you're able to move 3, whatever it is. But you have to do it in that order. So you're selecting your card based on how you want that to work out. And then you do it, and everybody else can watch you do your move. And we're all talking about how, you know, what the smartest thing to do is and how best to take down this room of bad guys or whatever it is. And you step through, and you can use the same card over and over and over in an encounter. You're not using up a card, which I think is one of the coolest innovations that this, not innovations, but coolest facets to how this rule system works. Because most games that do card stuff is, well, I spent that card, so now I have fewer cards to choose from, and I have to sort of strategically choose. No. This game, there's no mana. There's no used up a card. There's just, you have to do what's on that card, and you have to do it in that order. And you can do that card again and again and again if you want, if you have, you know, the ability to pull that off. So it gives you it gives each player a lot of freedom, and it gives, you know, the turn order a lot of freedom. And you really are collaborating as a group to defeat the bad guys and do what you're going to do. And there's a lot of really cool setting up other people for things. The way you move through people affects stuff. Like, for example, the bard character, places a musical note of a certain type on the map every time they swap places with a friendly or unfriendly character. So your move can create power-ups that other people can collect and will help them out. So there's a lot of that like synergistic co-play stuff that is really fun with a group of people. And then you go through your thing, you fight the bad guys, you do the things. The individual missions or the individual scenarios aren't always just kill everybody in the room. There's lots of cool stuff you need to do. There's lots of puzzle. And puzzle's a strong word. Not really a puzzle, but more like goals that you have to achieve that are not just kill everybody in the room, which I appreciate. But then once you've done that, then there'll be these between mission moments where you go back to town. And then everybody is on their individual phones looking at the map of the town. And there's all these NPCs and you can tap on any of them.
Oh, sorry. I was watching TikTok. What were we supposed to be doing on our phones? Sorry. I switched over just for a second.
Well, you get into these conversations with NPCs and there's like, I don't know, half a dozen, eight NPCs in a given town, and you're only able to have three conversations. So everybody can have up to three conversations, and your conversation with one NPC might be different than somebody else's conversation because of your different class types and the different things that you've done. But you're having this, you're gathering information that's unique to you, and certain things will be delivered to me on my phone that aren't delivered to somebody else on their phone. Cool. So you're getting sort of bespoke parts of the story. And doing your own thing. So it's a mix between like doing this very personal individual thing that I'm doing with doing the communal fun on the TV thing. So we played it. My group of friends played it over Discord, where the guy who owned the game was just streaming to us his screen. But it's meant to be played in the same room on a couch all sitting around a television.
That's what I was going to ask, because like all the marketing messaging is like Nintendo-esque.
Yeah.
Like it's like four hip friends all huddled on a couch together.
Which I think would be a blast. And I totally want to play it that way. But it also works as this Discord experience because we're all just talking to each other. And man, it is really well thought out. So
the phone link, you don't need to be in the same room for the phone link. It's not like NFT.
Nope.
Sharing a screen or whatever.
So slick the way it works. It's all QR codes. So you literally just scan the QR code and it puts you in that version of that game. It's so seamless. It's so easy. And so, you know, him streaming his screen gave us the QR code. We just pointed our camera at our screens and I'm in. Very slick, very easy. It gives you tons of information on your own personal version. So you're able to see everything that's in the room, all of the bad guys. It tells you like all their, it's the bestiary that you wanted in Clair Obscur, Matt.
There we go.
It gives you that on their phone. So like one of the cool things is when somebody else is doing their turn, I can also be kind of like, you know, planning my turn or thinking about it. It gives you stuff to do on your own phone. That's not just waiting for somebody to go. I think very highly of the game. I think the animation is lovely. I love the art. I love it's very colorful. And like I said, it's, you know, it's animals and it's almost, I think you could play it with a young kid too. There's, you know, it's obviously violent, but it's not an adult in any other way. And I think it's kind of approachable. You could sit around with a family and play this. I think they're really onto something here. And it's a $50 like all in. But I'm hoping I honestly have no idea how long this campaign is. It seems like it's pretty meaty. We played it for several hours, you know, only in one session so far. So I don't know how many sessions it would take to get through the story, if there's more than one story. But it does feel like this is the story, right? But I feel like the opportunity is there for them to add new campaigns and do different things and add new character classes and all that fun stuff. I'm really rooting for Sunderfolk. I did not understand how cool this project is. very niche in that, you know, you can't play it by yourself. You got to play with friends. But I think there's going to be a lot of people that would love to have a sort of tabletop adjacent RPG experience without the need of somebody to do all the work of being DM. And that's really what this is providing. And it's slick. It's like there's actual cutscenes. The story is conveyed in a really fun way. The combat is super fun. The character classes play really differently from one another. I'm into it. I really like it.
So that's what I'm kind of curious to ask, because I've been eyeing Sunderfolk for the last few months, and it's been one of those things where it's just like my partner likes video games. She likes board games to a certain extent, and at a certain point, like, her mind kind of turns off. So looking at Sunderfolk, I was always a little bit worried that it might be too much. I love D&D, and it seems to kind of take a lot of that, the different actions, bonus actions, reactions, kind of melting it together into a simplified, more streamlined version.
Yes.
You mentioned that you can play with a family, play with younger kids. Do you think that it's that approachable for somebody who might not be as well versed in the flow of that kind of combat, in the kind of turn-based-esque stuff? Because I would love to play it with her. I just don't know if she's going to resonate with it if it's not something that she can kind of ease into, if that makes sense.
I think that's a really excellent question, and I don't know if I can give you a definitive answer. I think, you know, like, I haven't played it with my kids. I was playing it with a bunch of guys that are very well versed in tabletop and, you know, video games. But I do think it, like you said, it takes away all of the wondering what can I do. It's like you have the card; it tells you exactly what you can do, and you're going to get three cards. There's a limit of three cards actually, and you'll swap in and out. You'll have a larger pool of cards, but you go into any mission only being able to use three different cards. And so, there's a lot of strategy in the application of those cards, but I don't feel like it would be daunting or overwhelming for somebody that isn't used. It feels more like a board game that you can wrap your head around. It's like, oh, I get it. I can move. I can fight. I can move. Or, you know, there's other cards that let you do. There's some really cool stuff that you get to do. So the cards are not bland or simplistic. There's some sophistication there, but it's clear. And I think it presented in a very clear way. And I think the maps so far that we've played on have been pretty small in that, you know, you're not, everything's kind of contained and I think very accessible. So I do think you could probably play with somebody that wasn't steeped in this experience and have a great time. I was certainly having a great time. I really can't wait to play again because we were just having such a blast and coming up with cool strategies. And there's fun, like the game has fun stuff. Like there's a character that just gets to pick people up and fling them. And, you know, we're on a bridge and, you know, it shows you the square or the hexes that you can fling people to. My buddy was like, do you think I could fling them off the bridge? And we're like, give it a shot. And it flung the guy off the bridge. And it said we did 999 damage by flinging them off the damage. And it's like, oh, that was amazing. You know, it's like cool stuff like that where you're having this communal experience and it lets you have a little bit of experimentation in there too. It's a pretty great package. I'm impressed with it. And I like that they're not trying to sell it to you piecemeal, you know, where it's like, okay, well, I bought the game and each of you has to spend $5 to buy the app or whatever. It's just like $50 all in. And again, I don't know how long of an experience that is for $50, but I suspect it feels like it's pretty meaty. So
do you know when this would have killed 5 years ago?
Not wrong. I wonder if it's a little late, but I hope not. I'm rooting for this one a lot. I'm really rooting for Sunderfolk. All right. There you go. That is our playlist, and that's going to do it for this episode of DLC. We do have parting gifts coming up, but before that, before we even get to parting gifts, let's do this. Matt wanted to do something special. He was talking about, he said, hey, can you carve out a few minutes at the end of the show? I don't even know what this is, but let's.
Because anytime someone says you want to play a game, the answer is always yes, not a resounding no, and you run away as fast as possible. Those are horror movie lines, Matt.
The difference between you and I. Before we get to that, though, Matt Sawinski, thank you for being here. You've been awesome. It's been a blast chatting with you. Tell folks where they can keep up with you and all the cool stuff you do online.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for having me. It's been awesome hanging out with you both. I've looked up to both of you for quite a long time, followed your work for years now. So being able to hang out here with you is a special moment for me. So thank you for bringing me on. Oh,
thanks.
You can find me on Blue Sky at Matt Silver Soul, and you can find my writing at Console Creatures and ButWhyThough.net.
Awesome. Very cool. Christian Spicer, what about you? What do you got going on this week?
Alex and I are further in our conversations for Feeling This season 4. I don't have it up yet, because I want to get it out closer to when we lock down our recording dates and times, but we want to put this season in a big way to the hands of the audience and kind of things that they think would be interesting. Alex and I keep a running Google sheet of topics that we think are interesting that we want to discuss, but after doing 3 seasons now, we kind of want to open those doors a little bit to topics that folks think would be interesting to have Feeling This discussions about. So I will put up an official post for all patrons here and not too long. But in the meantime, you can hit us up on Discord. Both Alex and I are there and very reachable on the DLC Discord, or also email us at dlcfeedback@gmail.com. This is the planning stage for Feeling This season 4. So if there's something that you think we haven't covered and that we should, before I get that Patreon post up, this is your chance to let us know.
Very cool. I hope people leap at that chance. What a cool way to put their mark on a really, really fun show. And patrons have been so awesome supporting it. So, yep. Folks, get in there. Do it. Okay.
Yeah.
My stuff. You know all my stuff. I want to mention again that I am raising money for the Providence Cancer Institute. That's going to happen in August. I'll be running 200 miles with a group of 11 other guys, and it's going to hurt a lot. The way that hurting will not be such a big deal is if we can raise some money for a really great cause. So that's where you come in. Go to runjeffrun.com, and you can support my efforts to, I don't know, affect some good in the world. By donating to this awesome event, any amount you can spare would be much appreciated. We're trying to get to $20,000. So it's a very ambitious goal. RunJeffRun.com. If you can spare anything, it would be much appreciated. Thanks, folks. All right. I'm going to hand it over to Matt Sawinski now. You tell me what we're doing. What's next?
Okay, so back in the day, I ran a podcast called the Burnout Writer Podcast, and a colleague of mine came up with a game that we've played over the years, and I brought forward to new places. The version that we play on the show is a little bit less G-rated, so I've modified it to make it more accessible and a little bit more approachable to all audiences. So we're going to 1v1. I will be the game master, and you two will go up against each other.
All right.
And it's a very simple premise. I'm going to give you a name, and you need to tell me whether you think that is a fighting game character or a fitness influencer.
Oh, I love this.
And we'll see over the course of 10 rounds which one of you is going to come out on top and kind of widen that nemesis pool as we come to love it. Who wants
fighting game character or fitness? These are real fighting game characters.
Yes.
Or real actual fitness influencers.
Correct. Yes. These are, none of this is made up. Did a bunch of research across a bunch of folks. So these are either real fighting game characters from real games or they're fitness influencers across Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, etc.
All right. Christian, okay. I can already tell I'm going to be terrible at this, but that's okay.
Hey, it's better than being stuck in the bathroom where I have to cut off my hand. I was thinking a different type of game. I'm in for this one, Matt.
That's part two.
Okay, great. Great.
All right.
Okay. The first person, their name is John Meadows. So I need you to tell me, and Jeff, I'll start with you first and then go to Christian and we'll rotate back and forth. Is John Meadows a fighting game character or a fitness influencer?
I feel like the whole point of this is whatever my gut instinct is probably not true. But I'm going to start with going with my gut instinct, and that is fitness influencer.
Christian, what do you think?
Jeff, I feel like we need to play the game like this so that we're not Googling.
No Googling. You know? I'm not going to cheat. Cheaters never prosper. I'm not going to Google.
There's not going to be any separation here. I'm going to agree with Jeff. Fitness influencer is what I would say.
Okay. For our second person, I'm going to run through all 10 and then we'll do a quick answer round.
Okay.
Our second person is Jared Feather. Is Jared Feather a fitness influencer or a fighting game character? Christian, I'll ask you first.
Well, it's not Ryu or Ken.
I was really expecting more Chun-Li's in here.
Not Scorpion. I'm going to go with fighting game character.
Okay. Jeff?
Oh, man. See, he's not even giving us the benefit of knowing whether we were right or wrong previously.
No, Matt's stone cold. Matt is stone. Yeah. If you're not watching the video version of this, he's just like, bleh, nothing. Right.
I'm not going to just side with you every time. So I'm going to stick with influencer. It's two influencers in a row, which seems unlikely, but here we go.
Okay. Our third person up, Baby Bonnie Hood. Is Baby Bonnie Hood a fighting game character or a fitness influencer? Jeff, your move first.
I'm going to go fighting game character.
Okay. Christian, what about you?
I'm sure I'm like...
Fluencer. I'm a big Bonnie Hood. I'm in Bonnie's hood.
Christian's got the t-shirt. Bonnie's... he's on her Patreon.
It's actually an OnlyFans, but go ahead.
Our fourth person up, Blitz Tank. Blitz Tank.
Now that Christian has to be an influencer because it sounds exactly like a fighting game character. So it's got to be an influencer just because... Oh, I wasn't supposed to go first. I'm sorry. I was supposed to be Christian first. I'm sorry.
Blitz Tank.
You can go first one twice word. In a row.
Oh, one word? Oh, God. Yeah, I'm going to go Fluencer. I'm going to go influencer.
It'd be
as well.
Amazing if this is just a list of only influencers and he didn't even do any video
games. I thought about it. I was this close.
They did a game like this, friend of the show on the Cheap Ass Gamer podcast, but it would be eShop game. Like, pick out which... I'm going to list like 20 names. Yeah. You have to tell me which one is a real name of a game on the Nintendo eShop. And it's funny. You can't. They're all garbage.
It's all garbage. All right.
Our fifth person, Coach Frizzle.
Christian?
Coach Fighting Frizzle. Game. Okay. Fighting game. I'd play as the old Frizz. Get me in there.
Coach Frizzle. No, I feel like Coach Frizzle is going to tell me to do 20 more push-ups. Coach Frizzle. Influencer.
Okay. Our sixth person up. The way that this is spelled is K apostrophe, but it's pronounced K dash.
That's a fighting game move.
But is that a fighting game character?
No, Christian, you get to go again first. I went.
Okay. K dash. I'm gonna go with fighting game character again. This is a video game show. I'm gonna lean on video game characters to help me out.
Okay, Jeff.
Yeah,
I'll
stick with I'll do video game character as well for that one.
Okay. Seventh up, Miss Dumpling.
Again, I am a subscriber, so Jeff, you can go first.
Miss Dumpling.
Miss Dumpling. I think Miss Dumpling is an influencer.
Okay. Christian, what do
you think? I'm gonna concur. I think an influencer.
Okay. Number eight, Miss X.
It's my turn. Fighting game character, but probably both. But fighting game character.
Yeah, Jeff, I'll go fighting game character as well. I don't want to agree with you the whole time, though.
Okay. Simeon Panda. Our ninth person is Simeon Panda.
Simeon Panda?
Yes. Spelled S-I-M-E-O-N.
Like ape panda. Simeon Panda. My turn to go first?
Yeah.
I'm going to say influencer.
Yeah, same. I can think of some pandas in Tekken, but they're not Simeon pandas. I'm also going to say influencer.
Okay. Our final person, Lord Raptor.
I'm going to say fighting game character. That sounds fun.
Man, I don't want to
agree with
you.
Primal Rage or something. I don't know.
Lord Raptor. Video game character. Come on.
Okay. Let's go back around. Our first person up was John Meadows. You both said that was a fitness character, fitness influencer. That is correct.
Yeah. All right, that's all we have time for. Yep.
Parting gifts. Play the bumper, Jeff. Play the bumper.
Our second person, Jared Feather. Jeff, you said fitness. Christian, you said fighter. That is a fitness influencer.
Yes.
Our third person was Baby Bonnie Hood. Jeff, you said fighter. Christian, you said fitness. That was a fighter, Jeff. You were correct, from the Darkstalkers series.
Crushing it.
Oh, man. I have that game.
Our fourth one up, Blitz Tank. You both said was fitness. That is a fighting game character from Blaze Blue.
I didn't play Blaze Blue. Mad at us. Yeah.
Our fifth one, Coach Frizzle. Jeff, you said fitness. Christian, you said fighter. Coach Frizzle is a fitness influencer.
So, Jeff,
that's another point
me.
For you. Sixth up,
K-Dash, you both said fighter. That is both correct from the King of Fighters.
Nice.
Seventh was Miss Dumpling. You both said fitness. Both correct. That is a fitness influencer. Miss X, both fighter. Also correct. That was a fighting game character from SNK. Simian Panda, both a fitness influencer. Both correct. And for our final one, Lord Raptor was a fitness... No, I mean, that's a fighting character from Darkstalkers. Final tally. Christian, you got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Jeff, you got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9.
I only missed one.
Running away with it. Just the fourth one with Blitz Tank. Jeff, you are the inaugural winner of Fighting Game Character or Fitness Influencer. Congratulations.
Jeff was right.
Wow, if only Jeff was as good at fighting games as he is as knowing the names of characters in fighting games.
that is literal fighting words.
I mean, literal. I literally have the video, so it's okay. I can.
That was so much fun, man. Thank you for bringing that, coming armed with a fun game for us to play. That was a blast. I really enjoyed that.
I have a game to play too. It's real quick. It's Matt's an idiot. Weird. Anyway,
you and my wife are going to get along great.
And Jeff was clearly typing the whole time. That's the game I have.
So fun. All right, let's wrap the show up now with our parting gifts.
Hey, give us a suggestion.
Matt, do you have a suggestion to help people get through their week?
Yeah, I want to shout out two bands, one of which that I love very much, the second of which is new to me. I'll start with my all-time favorite band is a band called The Wonder Years. It's where my tattoo is from, a band that has been there for me a lot. They're dropping a new acoustic album. Their latest one is about the lead singer's The Birth of a Son, and they basically take a bunch of their established, very pop-punk songs and strip them down. They have like an orchestra and everything. It's beautiful. And second of which, I wanted to shout out Summer Disease by a band called Millington. Ska punk, very fun, horns, very summery, just a good old time. It's a band that I've just discovered in the last few weeks and can't stop listening to. So just wanted to shout those two out because they've both been there for me a lot. And it's been a fun ride.
That's great. Millington and The Wonder Years, both bands that Matt likes. Christian Spicer, what is your parting gift?
I mean, it reflects poorly on how bad I did at this game at the end of the show with not knowing my fitness influencers. But friend of the show, Kyle Starr, I think mentioned this when he was on before, and I'm going to copy it because I started doing it. And I don't mean like get buff. I don't mean fitness influencer lifestyle, but weight training, just a little bit of weight training, whatever you're doing, whatever you know, your exercise routine is, I would encourage adding or re-adding like I did a little bit of weight training. I think that resistance is good for you, good for your bones, good for building muscle mass, obviously, but that's not clearly what I'm going for. But what I like about it, just a little bit of weight training again, there's not really much else that can make you feel sore the way weight training can when done properly. And I missed it. I love that feeling of like, oh yeah, ooh, yep, worked that out the other day. It's like instant feedback to know that you're, you know, making gains, as the kids would say these days. So I'd incorporate a little bit of weight training, whether that's body weight, dumbbells, whatever you got to do, into your workout routine.
We just got a pull-up bar, one of those ones that you can put on any door jamb, trying to do pull-ups with the kids before bedtime. And I've been doing some pull-ups again, and I'm like, oh.
Like they're hanging on to you, and you're like, get away from me.
Oh, dude, my daughter does that all the time. I'm like, okay, time for daddy to do his pull-ups. And I get there, and she's like, ah! She grabs on me like, let go. Please let go of me. Yeah. Anyway, yeah. Good stuff. All right, my parting gift is completely different, is a series of kids' books. I don't think I've mentioned these before, but I absolutely adore the kids' books that are written by Andrea Beatty. I think her name is pronounced Beatty. Beatty. These are a series that take place in Miss Lila Greer's second grade class. And it's all the students in Miss Lila Greer's second grade class. It's Iggy Peck, architect. It's Rosie Revere, engineer. It's Sophia Valdez, school prez. It's all these kids and their dream job and who they're meant to be. And they're written in rhyming couplets that I think evoke as the best of children's books like Dr. Seuss, the thing that rises these above not just being great, but being, I think, my favorite kids' books in existence is they also, each kid is dealing with a neurodivergent issue that's not overt. It's not slamming you in the face with this aspect of it. But as you read it, you'll understand that Aaron Slater, illustrator, is probably dyslexic. The other characters have other issues that provide challenges for them. And it is so beautifully written. We've purchased these for my kids, every single one of them. And each time I read a new one, I am invariably weeping by the end. It is so exquisitely beautiful. The rhymes are amazing. The lessons that you learn, the lessons the kid in the story learns, the lessons the community around them learns. Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. So if you have kids and you aren't aware of these books, every single one of them, we just got the one about the teacher. They've all been about the kids in the class. And there's the one about the teacher, Lila Greer, Teacher of the Year. And it's all about her anxiety being a teacher. And my God, it's just gorgeous. They do this thing at my daughter's school called Mystery Reader. And I went in as a mystery reader and read to the class and brought these books. And the kids just light up hearing them because the rhymes are great, but the stories really hit deep and they're beautiful, beautiful, beautiful stuff. So highly recommend.
And the new one coming out, Christian Spicer Podcaster.
Christian Spicer could be nicer, I think is what it's. He could.
Jeff Cannata sure says a lot of mean things about Mia.
All right. We have a listener suggested parting gift. This was sent to us at dlcfeedback@gmail.com. It comes from Ben. Ben says, I recently came across a game that I wanted to share with you, something that I'd never heard talked about, but it's clawing away at my time. I was browsing the Google Play Store the other day, just looking for something light and fun I could dip into on my phone, something casual but still engaging, and I stumbled on a little game called Dungeon Clawler by Stray Fawn Studios. And I've got to say, it's totally got its claws in me. This is a roguelite deck builder with a twist. Instead of drawing cards from a deck, you use a claw machine to try and get to the buffs and attacks you want. The tactile, almost toy-like feel of maneuvering the claw adds a unique layer of strategy and chaos that elevates the whole experience. And I find it absolutely brilliant. It turns a familiar genre on its head in a way that feels fresh, fun, and surprisingly deep. What's even more impressive is that the game isn't even version 1.0 yet. Despite that, it already feels super polished and well-balanced, with a great art style and soundtrack that match the quirky arcade meets dungeon crawl vibe perfectly. From what I'm seeing, there are also tons of unlocks. You can tell the folks at Stray Fawn Studio are really onto something special here. Honestly, it's almost as addictive as Balatro, which is saying something. That same one more run energy is absolutely there, and it's perfect for quick sessions or longer playthroughs when you've got some time to sink in. If you haven't checked it out yet, I'd love to hear your take. I bought the game on Android. It's also available on Steam and probably iOS. Keep up the amazing work. Your podcast is a weekly highlight for me. All the best, Ben. Thank you, Ben. I checked this out. It is available on Steam. This looks like my jam. A very clever game. Again, it's called Dungeon Clawler, and it's available on your phones and on Steam. If you'd like to have your parting gift read on the show, send it to us, dlcfeedback@gmail.com. All right, that's going to do it for this episode of DLC. Thanks again to Matt Sawinski and Christian Spicer for hanging out with me. Thanks to our musical contributors, Patrick L., Sean Madigan, and Zero Star, for those fun bumpers. Our theme song was composed by White Cube, which is Jason Sherry and T. Ryan Arnold. You can always get merchandise for our show by going to our store, store.dlcpod.com. Of course, our biggest, most heartfelt thanks are always reserved for our patrons who make this show possible. You can become one at patreon.com patreon.com/DLCpod. All right. We'll see you next week. Until then, think about what you put out into the world. Make it a better place.